Hey, El. I'm Zio.
I'm Em.
And we'd like to thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you very much.
If you like what you hear, consider supporting us on Patreon. We're on Patreon as FicFans with a Z. You
should give us tons of money.
Or none. No pressure.
Give us all.
Anyway, enjoy the program.
Thank you.
What's up, people? Welcome back to Fiction Fanatics. I'm Kermit the Frog.
And I'm Doraemon.
And today, we're talking about the early 2000s movie.
The blockbuster hit, Treasure Planet.
Despite me describing it as an movie, I don't actually believe that. I think this is a great movie. It just, no one thought so at the time.
It's one of those cult classic movies now.
Yeah. Everyone who's seen it is like, you know, that movie was pretty good. I wonder why it didn't do better. And there's lots of theories. Some people actually believe that this was around the time that Disney was trying to kill off their 2D animation. Also, there's also a theory that I'll get into later when we get into the history of this. Because it's like super, super tinfoil hatty. But before we get into that, history, personals. You want to go?
Sure, why not? I mean, I watched this kid as a movie. Wow, that had a stroke.
What?
I watched this movie as a kid. Yeah, that's about it. Like, I had the... They even have Happy Meal toys for this?
Yes, they did.
I can't remember.
It was so cool, and I'm so pissed as a child, because you got the entirety of the Treasure Planet orb.
Oh, yeah.
If you got all the toys.
We just made up all.
But that I only ever got one of them, because my folks didn't let me... My folks barely went to fast food places to begin with, and they weren't the parents who would eat there more often so I could get extra toys.
I had a nasty habit of eating McDonald's a lot.
Like, I legitimately, as an adult, after watching the movie for this, I had the thought, like, you know, people sell entire sets of toy premiums like that. Maybe I can get the entire Treasure Planet set just to have, because I kind of want it.
I remember years ago, like, years after I got done, like, saving, like, just Happy Meal toys, because I was like, I ain't gonna play with this, I'll just throw this in my toy box. I always remember I'd have, like, just random old men just show up, like, at garages, like, roughaging through them, just, like, trying to find, like, certain Happy Meal toys, which is weird to me. Like, I figured, like, little 5-year-olds will buy these for a quarter, not 30-some-year-old men just
some people
scarfing these down.
Some people collect toy premiums.
Just,
it's
I understand it. It's just weird
it
to
is
see in person.
Anyway, my history with this film. I watched this movie too much, like, legitimately. I had a habit of, if I liked a film, watching it over and over repeatedly if I owned it. And I owned this movie, like, basically from when it came out. I saw it in theaters and it was so fucking cool. And then I owned it on DVD and I watched it constantly. I must have seen this film, like, a good 1,000 or more times just because of how much I watched it as a kid. And now I watch it at least once a year. Because I still fucking love it.
I've done that with other movies, but not this one.
Yeah, this is one of my obsession movies as a children. I watched through all the bonus features on the DVD, all that shit.
The Die Hard Treasure Planet.
Yeah. Now, on to history of this film.
Of the film.
I gotta get to my notes, because I'm not smart enough to just be on that.
Treasure Planet is a 2002 American animated science fiction action-adventure film produced by The Walt Disney Feature Animation Company, and was released by Walt Disney Pictures on November 27th, 2002.
It is the 43rd Disney animated film. It's a science fiction adaptation of the Robert Louis Stevenson's 1983 adventure novel Treasure Island, and was the first film to be released simultaneously in regular and IMAX theaters. Oh my god, I would have loved to see this movie in IMAX.
Yeah. No, I didn't see this movie in theaters. I was trying to remember if I did watch that in IMAX. I remember our IMAX theater in this town had it there, but I didn't watch it there.
I didn't live in this town back then. Otherwise, I probably would have, because my folks would have been all over bargain movies at the museum.
Oh, I bet.
Because we went to bargain movies like a half hour away. So
if you lived in a town with bargain theater,
yeah,
it would be even better.
It invoiced a novel technique of hand to draw an animation set on top of 3D computer animation. A thing about that 3D computer animation. So, Disney basically invented an entire supercomputer and program to animate all the scenes in Tarzan. And those were some of the most expensive scenes in the movie. And they spent like billions of dollars developing that technology. And then the reason why this film is as expensive as it is that they decided to use that technology for the ship. Like every time you see the fucking boat in this film, it is in that program. It is a physical 3D set that is in this high-tech, ultra-expensive-to-run program for this entire film. That's part of the reason why this film has such a large budget and part of the reason it failed so spectacularly. Because they just lost so much on that.
They put a whole shit ton into a ship?
Yeah. With a budget of 140 mil, it is the most expensive traditionally animated film to date. The film was co-written, co-produced, and directed by John Musker and Ron Clements, who had pitched the concept for the film the same time they pitched The Little Mermaid. So there's actually a bit of a history with that too, which is kind of interesting, and I'm going to talk about it. So, Robert Clements and John Musker, Ron Clements and John Musker, they wanted to make Treasure Island, some version of Treasure Island, all the way back since The Little Mermaid. But the studio told them no and told them to work on other things. Go work on The Little Mermaid. Fine. And then after that was done, hey, can we do the Treasure Island thing? And they're like, no, go work on Hercules or whatever. And then they had to basically have like six successful movies before the studio was like, fine, make the movie you want to make.
Fine, I guess if you wanted to make this movie for the last 10 plus years, go ahead.
That's basically how this film got written. And it was like during this time where they were like, every time they had to kick the can farther down, they're like, okay, how do we make Treasure Island interesting? Since we already have a Treasure Island that Disney owns. Space. The musical score was composed by James Newton Howard, with a couple of songs written and performed by John Resnick. He does the two vocal songs in the film.
The two big songs?
The credit song and Jim's theme.
Oh.
It has a real name, but...
Yeah, I just don't know what it actually is.
I do. I fucking love that song. We'll talk about it when we get to it.
Yeah, good song.
Yeah. The film was a box office bomb, costing $140 to make while earning only $38 million in the United States and Canada, and just shy of $110 million worldwide. But basically everyone who saw it loved it, which makes sense. I really think that this film was sent out to die because there was hardly any marketing for it.
So sad.
There was hardly any marketing for it. Disney forced them to use this... I don't remember if they really wanted to make that entire ship that, or if Disney was like, hey, we spent all this money developing this for Tarzan.
So,
fucking
use it.
I actually don't remember. It was nominated for Best Animated Feature at the 75th Academy Awards. This was the third adaption that Disney had made of Treasure Island, with the original Treasure Island in 1950, Muppet Treasure Island in 1996. In addition, Treasure Planet was Clement and Musker's first non-musical film since they had made The Great Mouse Detective, which is also kind of funny, because The Great Mouse Detective, while not technically part of the Disney Renaissance, it was like the success that Disney needed to not fold their animation studio. Like, The Great Mouse Detective came out when Disney Studios was failing, and then it did well enough that Disney Animation kept going for a few more movies. And then The Little Mermaid came out and Disney made a shit ton of money off of the Disney Renaissance. So these people were kept from their dream project for like 20 years instead of 10, theoretically, after making several successful movies for the studio.
Don't know if they deserve it. Damn, it was worth the wait.
So Treasure Planet took roughly 4.5 years to create, but the concept of Treasure Planet in Space was originally pitched at a 1985 Gong Show meeting, the type where, like, you pitch, and then if they like you, they'll let you keep going, and if not, you're cut off and shut the fuck up. And it was the same meeting where they pitched The Little Mermaid. The pitch was rejected by Michael Eisner, who knew Paramount was developing a Star Trek sequel with a Treasure Island angle, which eventually was never made. So that wasn't even something...
they had to worry about.
Also, the reason Michael Eisner knew that is because this was like around the time where he used to be working at Paramount and then moved to Disney, so he had insider information he wasn't supposed to.
Bastard.
The idea was pitched again in 1989, following The Little Mermaid, but the studio was still like, no. And then after Aladdin, which they helped make, the idea was pitched a third time, and Jeffrey Katzenberg, that fucking asshole who has a weird and complicated history at the Disney company, was like, no, I just don't want Treasure Island. Who fucking cares? It's an old fucking story.
I don't feel like...
And Clements and Musker had to go talk to Roy E. Disney, son of Roy Disney, brother of Walt Disney, to like, hey, you're a majority stockholder in this company. Help make them, let us make this film, please.
He said, "Kay, I'll help."
And then in 1995, their contract was renegotiated, where he was basically like, fucking listen, we're making Hercules. We've been working for your studio for decades. Let us make this fucking movie. And so, and like, they were allowed to start working on Treasure Island on company time. Oh, I guess, yeah, since Musker and Clements wanted to make the move, wanted to be able to move the camera around like Steven Spielberg or James Cameron, there was a delay in production that was beneficial since that technology was being created for Tarzan. Hey, that thing I already talked about.
Hey, so they did use it.
Yeah, so they did want it. In 2002, Roy Conley estimated that there were around 1,027 crew members listed on screen credits, with about 400 artists and computer artists, and about 150 musicians, and another 200 technologists.
Yeesh.
According to Conley, Clements wanted to create a space world that was warm and had more life than you'd normally think of in a science fiction film, as opposed to the stainless steel blue smoke coming from the bowels heavily pipe-laden.
There's plenty of warm scenes.
Yeah. In order to make this film fun by creating more exciting action sequence, and because they all believed in having the characters wear spacesuits and helmets would be stupid, would take the romance out of it, the crew instead of created the concept of the Aetherium, which is basically an outer space that has atmosphere, which is why no one needs spacesuits.
But you don't die in space.
In this film. Well, you do die in space.
Unless you die in space.
There's lots of other ways to die in space. Like being...
kicked off a ship.
Yeah, or cut when there's no gravity and flying off to starve to death eventually. Or I guess, not dehydrate. Whatever.
Death.
Yeah, death. Death by lack of water.
Death from space sharks.
There are space whales, so why not space sharks?
Space mermaids, even.
Okay, so why this film didn't do well. Tinfoil hat time. So this film was already greenlit to have a sequel when they were conceptually making this film. And this was also around the time when Disney got it in their head that 2D animation was dead and that 3D was all that they were ever going to do forever because it was the only way to be profitable. Because Disney was being run by executives who were morons. Yeah, it's not that DreamWorks and Pixar are making better films than you that just happen to be 3D. No, it's that people only want 3D films.
You know, people don't come for story or characters or anything. They come for the three dimensions.
So tinfoil hat time. To have an excuse to not make that sequel that they had already promised that they would be allowed to make, they purposefully underdid the promotion for this film to kill it and then start seeding out the ability to kill animation as a whole, 2D animation as a whole.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's kind of tinfoil hat, but like, yeah. Weird how this film that was actually pretty good was under-marketed to become a commercial flop, and then they only made like three more 2D films after this. Weird.
They just did it to spite them for asking so many times.
Fucking maybe. I don't fucking know. This is toward the end of Eisner's reign, which had problems. Michael Eisner did many good things for the company, and he also did many terrible things for the company. He was a mixed bag.
That's one way to put it.
Because he did a lot of really cool things, too, but then he also did some really shitty things. Anyway, let's get on to the synonym.
Plottery.
Let's fucking go. So after the Blue Disney Castle, which I miss. I also miss that when back when that was the only one they had.
The only intro part?
There's only... this film and films of this time only had the Blue Disney Castle logo, studio logo. That was it. There wasn't, like, the subdivision of Disney Animation.
There wasn't the dancing Mickey Mouse from Steamboat Willie.
Yeah.
There wasn't the 3D... CGI castle
that they haven't updated since they made it 3D CGI, and honestly it kind of shows at this point. Also, it's just really long and boring. I miss the simple like little shooting star over the castle, and then
boom, a movie. Yeah. Whoa, a movie.
And then it was really cute when they would like screw with the Disney castle. It was really cute.
And I say it was a little charming.
Like for Lilo and Stitch, how it was like a green little spaceship crashing. We then hear narration as notorious pirate captain Nathaniel Flint attacks a ship. So again, like we've mentioned that this is Treasure Island in space. As part of that, they have what I can only describe as wood punk.
Yeah, you can't call it steampunk.
Because it's basically, everything is solar powered. But also everything's made of fucking wood and like wrought iron.
There's nothing, I mean, besides like the guns, there's really no like, not a lot of metal work.
But even the guns look like they're
flintlocks.
They look the same as flintlock, only they fire lasers or plasma or what the fuck ever.
They shoot purple stuff.
So while we're watching this happening, we're watching this fucking alien with six eyes called Nathaniel Flint, who's slightly different than the Flint from the original story, since he has six eyes and like four arms.
And is an alien.
Him and his like speedy attack pirate ship are attacking this big old giant massive ship full of rich people.
With like a cruise liner. Just stealing all their shit, setting the place on fire, presuming everyone's dead.
And then during the fight, as we watch some of the pirates jump from their ship to attack the other one, we see the most terrifying sight. A giant child's head!
Ah!
Yeah, this is just a future book. It's a hologram self-reading book.
It's a Kindle.
With holograms.
Nah.
But it's not that bullshit everything is blue hologram. It's like full 3D color holograms.
I say, it's not like Kindles with their black and white.
Or Star Wars that has everything is blue tinted. No one can tell me that's better than a flat screen in color.
So yeah, that is really, I always thought those were silly, but A, weird space technology.
Yep. It's James Pleiades Hawkins is the child in question, and he's reading after bedtime. Under his covers, trying to be all sneaky, sneaky, like when we snuck our Game Boys to bed.
I say, reading in this universe is like the Game Boys in ours, if you can consider it reading.
But his mom catches him, but she does let him finish, so that's nice.
Then she beats his ass.
She does not, because she is a good mom. Jim Hawkins has one good parent.
He has two parents, but one good one.
He has two. He has three and a half parents.
Not yet.
By the end of this film, he will have three and a half parents.
I guess we're
one...
talking about the space milkman, I guess. Yeah, he counts two.
You think it's blue or green milk? God, I'm not funny. Wish I was funny. It'd be nice if I was funny. I guess his mother's name is Sarah. I don't think they ever say it in the film, but I just looked it up. But her name is Sarah. Maybe Doppler says it once later. Anyway, Sarah and Jim finish the book, and we learn that Flint... First off, this is a, like, 100% true book. This isn't, like, a fictional book. This is, like, someone reading a biology book... Not biology. Like, a history book about Blackbeard in detail with visuals to a child.
Even though the mom's like, I think it's more of, like, a metaphor.
Well...
The treasure planet.
Yeah. Anyway, we learn that Flint, in his heyday, would swoop in out of nowhere, grab all the loot, and then disappear.
Vanished, like he teleported or something.
Without a trace.
Hmm.
And Flint's treasure has never been found, but legend says that his hoard is hidden on a secret planetoid, the loot of 1,000 worlds. Treasure planet.
Name drop.
But his mom doesn't really, like you mentioned.
That's a bunch of hooey.
Yeah, Sarah thinks it's just like a legend.
He spent it all on crypto.
He might have had this big loot thing, but I bet like his crew members, since they knew where it was, they just like took it all and spread it across the universe.
They just spent it.
But Jim loves the idea of Treasure Planet. Then we watch as it cuts to teenage Jim flying on his solar surfer.
And while he does his best interpretation of the sky falling from the Power Rangers movie.
Only cooler.
Only cooler. Not Power Rangers.
But, like, this scene is kind of rad as fuck, I'm gonna say.
It is very intense.
Because he is high octane. He is flying. A solar surfer looks like a windboard, like a windsurfer board.
But on air.
But it, like, flies with jets, and it, and, like, all the sails in this universe are also, like, solar panels. So that's how they move and do shit. And we watch him do sick tricks. He breaks into, like, this automated factory that he's not supposed to be in and starts, like, doing dangerous shit.
Like, going through the windmill grinder thingy?
I think it's supposed to be, like, a rock grinder crusher thing. Like, one of those giant wheel things that, like, just digs out entire mountains. And he, like, jumps in between the thing.
And almost gets murdered.
But he makes it out. And, like, all teenagers, he's like, yeah, I'm immortal! Woo!
I'm young, nothing can kill me.
And he is then caught by the popo.
And he's shot by the police.
Jim's mom, Sarah, meanwhile, is working at the family business, the Benbow Inn. She talks to family friend Delbert Doppler.
Is there any reason, like, why it's called that?
I think that might have been the original doctor's name. I actually do not remember enough about Treasure Island.
I'd say, like some of these, like, names, I'm like, are these, like, references to the actual book?
So I know that the doctor is an important person, but, like, give me a second. Through the power of learning.
Power of Google.
No, they renamed him because it was originally Dr. David Lives. They just changed one fucking pun for another. Because the original one is like a doctor.
Oh, I'm not talking about doctor. I'm talking about the inn.
Oh, the Benbow?
Yeah.
That's just the name of the inn from the original.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, did they just, like, straight up just, like, use the same inn?
Yeah, because the original one was called the Admiral Benbow. It was named after a guy. And then since they dropped that bit, it's just called the Benbow in this. But Dr. Doppler, who is like an astrophysicist, who in this world is kind of like a meteorologist and or navigator.
Or both.
Yeah. I think that's interesting, that I guess if you travel through space, astrophysicist might be your...
guide?
Your meteorologist. That's also why his name is Dr. Doppler instead of Dr. Livesey, because he's not a real doctor like the one in the book.
He does have a doctorate, though.
At this point, the Popo brings Jim into the inn, and his mother is like, Jim, what did you do this time? Apparently, he's done shit like this a lot, a few times.
Apparently enough that they know almost the exact protocol he keeps breaking.
Like, Jim knows the protocol.
Jim knows it more than the robot Popo do.
Yeah. And if he said, if we catch him doing breaking his parole again... he'll be sent to juvie.
To juvie.
To space juvie.
To space juvie.
And then Jim and his mom have this confrontation where it's like, Jim, what are we going to do with you? Mom,
do you want to go to space juvie? Huh? Is that it?
Mom, there was no one around. They just won't get off my back. And then we have this depressed moment where, like, I'm a teenager and I'm angsty, but I don't want to disappoint my mom and I don't want to be a screw up, but I just have so much angst.
I just want to go adventure shit.
And then he's... and then, like, he sits sadly on the roof, thinking all this shit. Oh, angst. And while on the roof, he overhears his mom and Doppler talk about him. And she's like, he's such a smart boy, but he just keeps making these mistakes, and I'm worried. What am I going to do with him? And he's been a little weird ever since his dad left. Dad left.
Daddy issues, no.
But then a ship crashes on the Benbow docks. Their little, like, ship space.
Apparently, Jim is the only one to notice.
Yeah, this huge fucking ship crash with a small explosion, and because Jim's outside, he hears it, but no one inside does. Also, it's like the end of the night, because no one's inside the building other than Doppler and Sarah.
They're just hanging out, talking.
Jim instantly runs over to see if the guy's alright.
Which he's not.
Yeah, it's an old lizard dude called Billy Bones. He seems to be dying. He's a weird lizard dude, but he does seem to be dying.
He does be dying, but he do have a treasure chest.
Jim helps him inside, because this is the part of the movie where we see that Jim has a good heart. He's just a little...
he's a little angsty.
Yeah. And inside, Bones warns Jim about the cyborg who's chasing me. He wants what's in this chest. Don't let him have it! And he opens up the chest and gives Jim a ball wrapped in cloth.
The effect for the chest opening did not age very well.
No. Some of the CG in this film isn't perfect. But it's not terrible either.
It's not terrible, but...
it's not the fucking clockwork stuff from other from that other mouse movie, The Great Mouse Detective.
Great Mouse Detective.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. It's not good, but it's not bad.
Then the inn is attacked by the people who are chasing Billy.
But we don't see who they be.
Yeah, we don't get a good look at any of the pirates that attack the Benbow Inn for story reasons.
But we do know they be pirates.
Yeah, because we see their flag. Anyway, fucking Jim and his mother, like, as the inn is burning around them and, like, people are breaking in, jump out the window into Doppler's fucking, I guess it's a cart.
Yeah, it's like a little crappy cart with some weird bipedal alien monster.
A carriage.
A carriage.
And they, like, book it as their fucking livelihood burns behind them. At Doppler's place, they do what they can to recoup, and obviously, like...
Sarah's depressed.
Because her entire livelihood just burned to the fucking ground.
I guess her livelihood and all of her, like, possessions, because, I mean, I guess they live there.
Yeah, they live there, so all their personal belongings. The only personal effect they have is Sarah has this locket full of holograms of Jim at various points in his life.
That's it. Besides the ashes.
And the clothes they were wearing, and that weird thing that Bones gave them. I love this, and, like, Doppler's like, listen, you can stay here as long as you need. I wonder why they were after that thing. It's such a weird orb thing. It'll take years of study and effort.
Protagonist bullshit powers.
Yeah, like, Jim is just fucking around with it, pressing random doodads and spinning random bits. And then the fucking orb opens.
Almost like a Rubik's Cube that was only turned 3 times from its starting position.
Also, he's the only person who knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Who could figure out how to do it.
Bullshit protagonist powers.
And it opens this map of the galaxy. And, like, it's a super accurate map. Like, they find their planet. They are on the planet Montressor.
Montressor. And there's Bleeblorp 7. Like, and there's Galabadish.
Yeah, they touch Montressor. And then the map, like, starts moving to show them a course to a specific place. And at the end of the map, it's
Treasure Planet.
And obviously, Jim's like, oh my god, this is a map to actual Treasure Planet. I want to go. And Sarah's like, no, you are not going. That's a stupid idea.
Even Doppler's like, yeah, that's so stupid. It's brilliant. Let's go.
Well, Doppler's like, yeah, we can't let a teenager gallivant the universe on his own.
So I'm going with you.
I'll fund everything. I'll hire a ship and a crew and a captain. I have all my life savings. I'll just shove it in there. Adventure. This is the adventure of a life, and now the universe is screaming, go Delbert, go Delbert, go Delbert.
So on one part, like, yeah, this is a lot more money than probably his life savings is, but also that's like putting all of your life savings towards the Powerball.
I think it's more like, imagine if you were told that you found the map the map to an ancient temple. And that at the center of the temple was a treasure. Even if that treasure was bullshit. Imagine the story you could tell your kid if you were like, yeah, I got to the center of the universe. There wasn't any treasure, but maybe the real treasure was the friends we made along the way.
And it only cost me $495,286, and now we're broke as shit and we have to suck wiener on the corner.
And that's why your father didn't go to college.
Or your grandfather. Or his grandfather. Or his grandfather. Because we're poor forever.
Great-great-grandpa, you said there was no treasure. How come you're 300 years old?
Fuck you. That's why. I'm a dog alien, man. Yours work different.
Whatever. Anyway. And obviously, like, Sarah's like, no, you're both not going. That's stupid.
You're both grounded.
And then Jim's like, Mom, I keep screwing up. This could be my chance to do something right for a change. And then... Delbert, like, pulls her aside. He's like, listen, there's a lot worse things to do for a troubled young lad than a few character-building months out at sea, at space.
At sea space.
And she's like, are you telling me this because you really want to go or because it's the right thing to do?
Why not both?
Yeah, he goes like, I really, really want to go. And it's the right thing to do. Yeah. I mean, even if this map is bullshit, since Delbert's paying for everything, they're really not out anything if as long as he doesn't die at space.
Yeah, Jim... the only thing that can happen is his death. Or gets kidnapped.
But this is, like, basically Victorian space pirate thing. Like, this is sort of the Victorian era, sort of, like, the revolutionary era, sort of the era of pirates, but also space.
Space.
So, like, what else is a family with no money whose livelihood just burned down gonna do? Jim's gonna have to get a job anyway. And the only jobs are, like, dangerous, horrible ones that pay jack shit. So might as well go out to sea and hopefully get paid massive amounts of money.
On this guy's dime.
Yeah. We then cut to the Montressor Moonport, which is one of the coolest locations in the movie.
I like it. A little crescent moon base thing.
Yeah, it looks like a crescent moon from a distance, but then as you get closer, you see that the entirety of it is made up of white buildings. Also, this is like what they used in a lot of the early promotional material. It was literally just the camera moving closer to the Montressor moon base and seeing that that's no moon. That's an entire fucking
space
city.
Station. I mean, yeah, city.
Once they get there, the two, Doppler and Jim, walk together to try to find the ship they're going on. We see that Doppler has wasted more of his money than he already has on this expedition on an explorer suit.
Just.
Yeah, since we know that no one needs a spacesuit, the fact that he has what looks like a giant scuba suit with a power supply that it has to plug into
is actually worthless.
Exactly.
He got scammed.
Yeah. So they make it to their ship, the RSS Legacy.
Ah.
And the tech in this movie is really awesome. Like I mentioned, it's the best thing I can really describe it as is wood punk. Because it's not really steampunk, and it's not really like cyberpunk. It's sort of halfway between the plus wood, for lack of a better way of describing it. I completely get what they meant when they wanted to have a warm sci-fi movie compared to
cold calculated metal.
Or like that sort of plasticky white blue that some places... Like, there's the Star Trek whites and blues, and then there's, like, grungy Dune.
Yeah.
And, like, Nostromo.
Where they only have, like, red and orange.
And pipes. Just massive amounts of pipes. Not that there aren't pipes in this film, but there's just a lot less than there could be. On the ship, they meet Captain Amelia and First Mate Mr. Arrow.
I like him. I hope he stays around the movie for a while.
Yeah, Captain Amelia is a furry bait cat lady. And Mr. Arrow's a rock.
And also she has a British accent.
She's the only person in this film with a British accent. Which kind of makes sense, because in the original Treasure Planet, the captain of the ship was supposed to be a former Navy captain.
Original Treasure Planet?
The original Treasure Island. There actually was a Treasure Planet before this Treasure Planet, sort of. It was called Treasure Island in Space.
Treasure Space Planet?
It's a fucking film. It's a thing.
Also,
there's an 1982 film called The Treasure Planet, which is also based on Treasure Island, but it's Bulgarian and very interesting. We might look at The Treasure Planet someday, because I didn't know about it till I was doing research for this, and it is a little
different.
Fascinating. It's a 1982 Bulgarian animated film, so it's just, I've looked into it a little bit, and we might need to look
Bulgarian
into it more later. Captain Amelia Doppler is about to like talk about, he introduces himself as the financier and he's like, this is Jim. He's the boy who found the treasure.
Shut up.
Yeah, Amelia like cuts him off and then brings them to her like stateroom where she talks about like, yeah, you who hired the crew, I hate all these people. They are all like crooks and thugs. I don't trust any of them.
You want to tell them you have a treasure map? You're an idiot.
Like, literally, the only people she fully trusts on this ship are Mr. Arrow, Doppler, and Jim. And that is it. Everyone else, she's has her eye on because they don't look like the quite outstanding crew that they
are usually with.
Yeah. And so, like, she goes like, listen, Doppler, shut your howling screamer. Never talk about the map in front of everyone. You, boy, give me the map.
I am kind of curious how the hiring process goes for the crew.
So, back in the day, this is a similar thing happened in the original Treasure Island story. This isn't something they invented for this.
I would expect.
But in the kind of back in the day, and kind of what happened is you'd hire a captain, and then you'd hire a first mate, and then you kind of just had a table that was set up to hire everyone else.
Just random people like, all right, can you last on the sea? Maybe. All right, get on.
That's kind of how it worked sometimes. And basically, in this story and in the other one, and in the original, This crew was hired by the good doctor with too much money and too little sense, because he had no idea who to hire for a crew, and so he basically hired...
The first schmucks he found?
He hired this one guy who came super recommended to him, and then had that guy recommend every other crew member other than the captain and the first mate. That's how the original story went. It was some bloke called Silver, I don't know. I don't know if he's in this film.
I doubt it.
Anyway, Amelia makes Jim the cabin boy, and is put under the control of Silver, who is the cook. And when Jim meets Silver, he thinks he's suspicious because Silver is a cyborg. A
little racist, but whatever.
And Silver isn't thrilled to be responsible for this little
twerp.
Silver also has this pet morph named Morph.
Morpheus. I mean, yeah, Morph.
It's just a pink blob of goo that can transform into anything as long as it's not bigger than it is.
It's this movie's minion.
Morph is adorable, but it's also really funny because, like, he'll completely copy a person, but it's just, like, this tiny action figure version of them.
Just a tiny, like, 1/24 scale of them, and will, like, have a high-pitched version of their voice.
Silver's like, hey, Jim, you've never seen a ship launch before. Go watch the launch. And then as soon as Jim's out of the room, he talks to Morph super creepy, like, we'll have to keep an eye on that one, won't we, Morph? Mwahaha.
Evil.
We watch the launch, which really is a sight to behold. I don't actually have the skill to be able to describe how cool it is. But we watch as the solar sails are let loose, the ship begins to power up, and they just burst out of port.
They fly.
Also, even though there's atmosphere in the ocean space, Etheria, there isn't gravity out there, so they actually have to have a gravity pump. Which is fine, it's whatever, but
they have,
like,
temporary gravity.
They have a gravity machine that isn't always on. Like, they have to have someone turn it on as they're leaving dock, but, like, they don't turn it on immediately, so everyone starts floating for, like, 5 seconds, and then they turn it on for some reason.
Maybe it'd just be too much gravity.
Maybe.
Also, this is the part where we make introduction to probably my favorite character in the movie, the fart monster.
He's a flatulent.
A flatulent.
He literally just talks in fart noises, and, like...
We get to hear from this guy at least a good 4 or 5 times through the movie.
Yeah.
So if you love not even fart jokes, just the sound of someone farting directly in your fucking ear, a nice, wet, disgusting fart, you'll love this. You'll probably get your rocks off to this movie.
So after the launch, Captain gets on Silver's case about Jim. Hey, your cabin boy's not doing shit. I left him in your care to do work.
Not hang off the fucking mast, stupid.
And so Silver's like, just a momentary problem. Jimbo! And that's the first time he gets called Jimbo in this film, but not the last.
Jimbo.
And he introduces Jim to some new friends. Mr. Mop!
And Mrs. Bucket, his two best friends for the rest of the trip.
Yeah, and so Jim starts mopping the deck, and as he's mopping, some of the other crew members, like, are kind of, like, whisper talking to each other just over there. And they're like, hey, why are you fucking listening to us, cabin boy?
What are you looking at, weirdo? Yeah, what are you looking at?
Weirdo. And then Crab Man, he has a name. I don't fucking care.
Zoidberg?
He has a name. He's actually from... His name's Mr. Screw, I'm pretty sure.
Like Scropus or something.
It's Mr. Screw, I think. But I also don't care that much. Scroop. It's Mr. Scroop.
That was close.
Mr. Scroop, who is a crab man in this version of events.
Just like in the original.
He's a dick. He's like, cabin boy should learn to mind their own business. And then Jim's like, yeah, I would mind my own business. At least that way I wouldn't have to smell your breath.
Oh, and then you start to almost get into a fight.
Yeah, Crabman is about to fucking shank Jim.
With his lobster claws.
But then Silver saves him by using his cyborg parts, because his cyborg parts, he has a cyborg eye. His arm is a cyborg part that can, like, change between fingers and little claw things and
a
knife.
Got a multi-tool arm.
And his leg is, like, pneumatically powered. Instead of, like, a peg leg, he has a pneumatic leg.
He's got a pneumatic peg.
Also, something that I didn't know until I was told, all the cyborg parts of Silver are CG.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, like, it's not something that's immediately like noticeable unless you were told that.
I don't know. I could see it in some scenes. It's
not
pretty...
some scenes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's 3G. In some scenes, it looks very 3D.
But like, all the time it is.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I'm saying that effect has aged fairly well.
Yeah, that ages. Yeah. That's looked very well.
Silver saves him. And then after saving him from the Crab Man, Mr. Arrow's like, hey, knock it off, you fucking bitches. And the Crab Man looks at The Rock and goes, I don't like you.
You told me I'm being an asshole because I wanted to kill a child. Fuck you. Dick.
And then Silver sets Jim back to mopping. And then he has a meeting with the crew in the galley area where he's like, why the fuck are you all acting like morons?
And we kind of understand that he's a bad guy.
Yeah, Silver is the leader of this ragtag group of pirates. They are pirates. He mentions that they are pirates. It's not a secret.
And they're also the same ones that burnt down his house.
Yeah, so Silver, every member of the crew that isn't Jim, the doctor, the captain, and Mr. Arrow is a pirate, and Silver is the leader of them. And he's yelling at the rest of his crew, I had to spend so much time and effort to get us hired as an upstanding crew, and you fucking morons...
We're gonna throw it away.
Just because, oh, a fucking cabin boy made me slightly annoyed, so I'm gonna shank him.
Morons.
Dumbasses. Like, he very much is like, knock it off. Stop asking suspiciously.
Well, mutiny when I tell you to mutiny.
And not before then. We need to get to the damn planet, then we'll fucking mutiny. No sooner. When I give the order, it happens. No sooner, no later.
Capiche?
And then Crabman mentions, like, that cabin boy will be a problem because he's suspicious. And Silver's like, I'll just give him so much work he won't have time to fucking think. Then that'll solve that problem.
I'll just work him to the fucking bone. How about that?
Some time passes. It's like that evening now. And Silver goes like, hey, you've been on deck for like 6 hours and you haven't died in a fight.
That's surprise, surprise.
And Jim's like, hey, thanks for saving me back there.
Thanks for backing me up, home slice.
And then Silver says, didn't your pop teach you how to pick your fights a bit more carefully?
Huh.
And Jim's like, well, no, my dad wasn't the teaching kind. He was more of the
fuck off and run away type.
And then Silver, after this, is like, you know what? For the rest of the voyage, I'm going to run you ragged. I'm going to teach you all the skills you need to sail and all the hard work it takes to be a sailor. You won't have time to eat, sleep, or breathe unless I give you the time off.
Well, I didn't need that, but okay.
And then we get a montage to Jim's theme and the best song in the movie, I'm Still Here.
Never show.
I'll play a little bit, but that's like a real ass song owned by a giant mega corporation, so probably not the whole
probably
thing.
Not a lot.
Like sometimes I just put the whole fucking song in these.
Fuck it.
Because who fucking cares? But then this is like something that Disney would actively kill us for. They'd send snipers to kill us.
You get knocks at your front door that weren't me.
But I'll sing a little bit of it. 'Cause I want a moment to be real. Wanna touch things I don't feel.
I forgot my guitar at home or else I'd play it.
Anyway, during this montage, we watch Jim, abridged version of Jim's life story. As he's learning, like, we cut between him learning stuff on the ship.
Chucking barnacles. And him playing in his living room.
Yeah. Oh, he learns how to tie actual sailor knots, which are like some of the best knots in the world. No kidding.
He's good at that.
And we also get flashbacks of Jim's dad being an absent father even before he left.
Yeah, years before he left. Like, he was just a shit dad in general.
He was a shitty dad, and he stayed around being a shitty dad until Jim was like 10, and then he took off.
And he's like, all right, now I'm tired of this. Bye. It's not like he just like left on a whim. Like, there's a part where like his mom's crying and like...
Yeah.
He meant to let... He's like, all right, bye forever. It's not like...
He doesn't even say goodbye to Jim,
No, though. He just kind of just walks out before his son even realizes he's leaving forever.
Like, Jim sees him walking outside from his bedroom, runs downstairs, sees his mom is crying, and then runs out to try to, like, talk to his dad, but his dad is already on a boat and leaving by the time he gets to the dock. Because his dad's that big of a dick.
Dick. Yep, fuck that.
And we also see, like, Jim and Silver growing closer as they work together and as Silver teaches them things. He teaches them how to pilot a skipper.
Almost becoming a fatherly figure.
And then after the best song, I'm Still Here, and Silver, and they get back with the skipper after we see how good Jim is at piloting it, they put the skipper away. And as they do, Silver's like, oh, man, you're really good at piloting that skipper. If I could pilot like that...
When I was your age...
Everyone would still remember my name.
So they'd be bowing and saluting me on the way out.
And then they have this heart-to-heart, where Jim's like, yeah, after this voyage, people are going to start to respect me. I'm not just going to be the town screw-up. I'm going to be almost a hero. And Silver's like, yeah, maybe don't put all your eggs into that basket. I'm not sure that'll work out for you.
Oh, yeah, about that. We might fucking kill you and steal all the treasure for ourselves.
And Silver also explains that he lost all of his meaty bits because he was chasing a dream and that he hopes it'll soon be worth it. And then the ship is caught in a supernova, which is, I guess, the space version of a super bad hurricane.
Yeah, we're just going to ignore that it's not an actual supernova, because they'd be dead.
Yeah, there's like layers of how this isn't a normal cosmic event, but also this is a space with an atmosphere, so we can kind of ignore some of it.
Space whales.
Yeah. So the ship is caught in a supernova, which is, like I said, a space hurricane. Everyone fastens the lifeline and begins doing emergency work. One crew member uses the singular cannon on board to try to shoot at the asteroids attempting to hit the ship.
And then they have to,
they have to batten down the hatches.
Yeah, batten down the hatches. They gotta, like, tie up the sails because they're taking holes from the asteroid.
Yeah, and it's like, yo, if we lose our sails, we won't be able to, like, sail, so, like...
We won't be able to gather solar energy and then, you know, fuck off. So, pull them up.
But then, it looks like they're about to be okay. Except for a giant fucking rock's gonna destroy the entire ship, but right before it's about to crush the ship,
the supernova goes black hole and sucks it back.
Which isn't a thing. Either you go super... So a supernova is a star exploding and a black hole is a star imploding. I don't think both can happen.
I'm not an astrophysicist, so I don't know.
Neither am I. I could be wrong, but I feel like if your star is already exploding, it doesn't then decide it's going to implode. After that. But I could be wrong. Neil deGrasse Tyson, you can yell at us on Twitter.
All astrophysicists listen to this, or all armchair astrophysicists can tell us.
So this black hole is also firing waves of solar energy, I guess, because it was a star, and so it's like sending out pulses of massive energy that the ship has to batter around, like...
Like waves,
because this is a space hurricane, and the cap, and like, The captain's like, how are we going to get through this? The waves are completely erratic. And Doppler, who is an astrophysicist, is like,
no, they're not. They're actually in some kind of rhythm. The next one will be in 47 seconds.
And then a giant fucking one.
In like 2 minutes.
And then the captain's like, that's brilliant. We'll ride the last wave. And then like all the sails have been secured.
Tell those schmucks to unsecure those masses. Like, we just put them up. You heard me.
Make up your damn mind.
And so Crabman's upset because I don't want to do the same job twice.
And because Mr. Arrow's the one who's relaying orders, because first mate's basically, captain gives the orders, first mate yells them three times as loud. Half of your job as first mate is to yell the orders your captain wants to talk.
At least the first mate is nice enough to go up there and actually help you do the job.
Yeah, anyway, so they're all, like, unfurling the sails again, and Mr. Arrow's helping up there. But he slips. He's holding on by his lifeline. Back with Jim. Jim was ordered to secure all lifelines.
Make sure they're all tied nice and tight.
To make sure that, like, we don't lose anybody. You have to, all the lifelines that are tied down, like, tighten all of them. If one's loose, retie it.
So that's just something kind of funny in my mind about future technology, is we have portable gravity devices and solar wave sails, but our best lifelines are loose, frail rope.
Well, they wanted a vaguely piratey future. They want to... Everything's made of wood, too.
We have the cure for AIDS, but we still have the flu.
Actually, that's probably going to happen.
I'm waiting for it.
Well, that's probably going to happen because, like, the flu and, like, the common cold are super, like, they mutate super easily. But like, if AIDS is one of those things that once we get down, we'll have down.
Hopefully.
Probably.
Until the government redoes it. Tin hat. But anyway, yes, I just find it funny that certain things are super advanced, yet some shit is still, like, I've seen the Stone Age with more highly advanced technology.
Yeah, it is kind of funny and a little jarring, but I also think it's part of the charm of the film, where it's like, oh yeah, the deck's made of wood, but we also have a plasma cannon.
Yeah, we have plasma cannons. Yeah, we got iPod books. That's not weird. Who needs TVs when you have book TVs?
What the fuck's a radio? All we have are these letters that holographically project the words out in front of you.
That say them out loud to your face.
Anyway, during the chaos, like we said, Mr. Arrow, he's like hanging on by his rope. And our funny little crab man begins cutting the rope. And he does it super slowly like a dick. And then he just snaps it. And Mr. Arrow falls directly into the black hole.
As a thing from the Fantastic Four is dead.
They escape from the black hole. They ride the last super megana wave. Super wave of energy, whatever. And everyone celebrates. Everyone's alive. Mr. Arrow drinks all around.
And then Crabman comes over with his hat, all like fake crocodile tears sulking. I'm sorry to say that Mr. Arrows is no longer with us, and his, brings his hat.
Yeah, his lifeline wasn't secure. I love how he had to have planned that, because he cut the rope like super far close to Arrow. He then had to, like, when no one was looking, cut the line right at the anchor point to make it look like it was Jim's fault.
Or one of his assholes crew members were like in on it and like undid it and threw it overboard.
Like, that took some fucking planning.
That took a little, yeah. Because, like, if they just cut it, then that'd just been obvious. Wait a minute.
It wasn't just...
That's not my fault.
It wasn't even that they fucking... what he could have done if he didn't want to blame Jim, it was just like, oh, his line, it snapped. I tried to save him, but I couldn't.
Darn.
But no, he purposely was like, fuck the cabin boy. I hate that little bitch. He killed...
He killed him. It's his fault. He didn't actually secure all of them.
And so
what an idiot.
The crew have their moment of silence. Jim takes it really fucking hard, and he starts blaming himself too because he doesn't know any better.
And the captain has a little eulogy like, he was a great man. People wish he could be like him.
The best man I ever knew. We are all less for having lost him.
To the space Davy Jones.
And then, like, Jim, he's fucking like, he just got over crying. We don't get to see him cry because this is Disney and boys don't cry in Disney films.
Not until later.
They're not allowed to. Real emotions aren't family friendly.
Emotions? Fuck those.
Boys have to be princesses and girls have to be princesses.
Boys have to be princesses.
Princes.
Prince I.
And then Silver gives him a little pep talk about how it's not really your fault. But then Jim's like, I screwed up and someone fucking died. And obviously Silver can't tell him that he knows. He knows, like, instantly he knows. He wasn't aware of the plan, but he just looked at our friend the Crab Man. He's like, you fucking dick.
He knew he killed him on purpose.
And Silver has this line. I actually have the entire quote written down because I might just splice it in. I'm going to say it, but then if I don't like my take, I'm just going to splice in the real fucking take thing.
No, you listen to me, James Harkins. You got the makings of greatness in you, but you got to take the helm and charge your own course. Stick to it, no matter the squalls. And when the time comes, you get the chance to really test the cut of your sails and show what you're made of. Well, I hope I'm there. Catching some of the light coming off you that day.
Cries.
And then, like, Jim hugs Silver, and, like, Silver hugs him back, and Jim, feeling a little bit better, walks away, and Silver has this moment of, oh, Morph, I'm getting in too deep.
In too deep. I'm actually liking this boy.
Yeah. Then later. I assume this is several days later, at least.
I'd hope.
Like, we don't see the entire voyage, but this voyage supposedly took a few months.
Well, we go from looking at a grate from dark to, like, a daytime blue.
Yeah.
Which makes no fucking sense.
No, this is space. There's no day in space. There's no night in space.
Do they have portable atmosphere? Like, do they have a tiny sun along with their tiny gravity?
They have a tiny sun that just circles the ship.
That'd be so stupid, and I would love it if it did. That'd be fucking funny.
And then, so Jim, he's like one of the first people to wake up because he's the cabin boy, which means he has to help, like, prepare breakfast and all that shit.
Rob the poop deck.
So he's, like, awoken, and then through shenanigans with Morph fucking around with his shoes, and they're playing around like you would with a dog. Give me back my shoe, boy! Morph, you little... Knock it off!
That Morph turned into the shoe.
Yeah. And but through the shenanigans, Jim ends up in a barrel of perps, which are, like, space... fruit. They kind of look like space mangoes.
Space? Oh, they're purple.
Perp.
They're like plums, almost.
Space avocado.
Space cados.
Like, they're not like an apple, because they seem to have a, like, they're squishy. So they're almost like a peach, or a pear.
It's a big grape.
But they're called perps.
They're perp.
Also, in the original book, it was a barrel of apples that this happened in.
So they're space apples.
But we just talked about why they're not space apples. Anyway, while he's in the stupid barrel, the pirates actually have a meeting in the galley and no one bothers to check to see if they're alone. So he's just in this barrel and is able to overhear everything. And he overhears about how the Crab Man is the one who killed Arrow.
Silver gets pissed off, like, you fucking idiot, you killed him, you moron, why?
And then Crab Man's like, I think you're going soft on us, Silver.
No, stupid, I was playing up, I was fucking kissing his ass, making him feel better so we can worry about him less.
It's like, I only said that shit, like, he actually apparently heard the entire thing. You've got the makings of greatness in ya. And Silver's like, I only said that because of what, to, like, patch over the problems you created by killing him too soon.
Stupid.
I don't actually believe that shit.
The only thing I believe in is money, which is what we're gonna get when we fuck him over.
The boy means nothing to me. Nothing to me.
Jack Diddley.
Jimbo means absolutely nothing to me.
I'll kill him right now.
There's also this kind of funny scene where, like, the Crab Man reaches in to grab a perp, and Jim has to, like, pick one up and put it in his claw so he doesn't get caught.
So he doesn't look down into the barrel and see that he's just sitting there.
And then, like, this meeting is cut short when outside someone has spotted the planet.
The planet!
I see it, a planet! It's land ho! I guess
you'd think you'd see it coming
a little sooner.
Yeah, you know, it's a whole ass planet.
Yeah, but everyone rushes outside to get a better look, and, like, Jim exits the barrel like, oh my god, my new father figure doesn't give a shit about me. Also, there's pirates on board. Also, there's a mutiny. Also, we're all gonna die.
Also, yeah, I didn't kill that guy.
Yeah, so it's a lot to take in all at once. But outside, Silver's like, shit, I forgot my spyglass. I left it down in the galley.
Oh, which we go back into there and see it on the table, and he's trying to run upstairs before they see he's down there.
Yeah, so Silver goes back inside and he catches Jim.
Ah, playing games, huh, Jimbo?
Yeah, Silver, I'm playing games.
I was never good at games. Wally switches his hand behind his back into a flintlock pistol.
Into a flintlock blackster. And then Jim grabs, like, I think a like cut, like a metal plier cutter thing. And he stabs Silver in his leg.
In his pneumatics.
The only reason I know it's pneumatic is because it doesn't leak oil, it leaks air.
But yeah, he doesn't stab him in his flesh leg.
Yeah, he stabs him in the robot leg, which kind of makes sense.
Which is a lot nicer of him.
But also, like, if you stab a guy in the leg, you bandage that up, that's still mostly fine. But if
that hurts like fuck.
Yeah, it's a difference of causing pain or effectively slowing him down for longer. Both slow him down. But unless there's a cyborg repair plant on board, which there isn't.
Or a spare.
Yeah, which there isn't. So Jim runs off, makes it to, like, the captain, and gets everyone who isn't a pirate in there. It's like, fuck, fuck, shit, fuck. And the pirates have to make their move because they're about to be...
They're going to be discovered like a imposter in Among Us.
Yeah. So, I love Silver. He like, has... He It's weird. He doesn't have, like, a whistle on his robot hand, but he can use his robot hand to whistle. Which doesn't make sense because his, like, fingers are semi-hollow.
Also, before he whistles, he uses his robot eye to search for where Jim is.
And then, like... Yeah, his eye can, like, target, which is kind of neat, but also kind of stupid.
He can, like, zoom out like a freaking camera lens and look around. But yeah, he sees him going to the cabin score. He's like, well, fuck it, whistle noise.
Come on, lads, we move now! Because, yeah.
And so big guy knocks a hole in one of the doors into the armory, steals the guns.
And then they all start trying to blast their way into the captain's quarters.
Which I don't understand because it is also a wooden door.
But they're aiming at the lock mechanism, which is metal. It looks kind of like a submarine, like, bulkhead type, like, door. Only made of wood with metal in the center. But yeah, they don't try to smash that wood. They try to blast through it.
They have a guy the size of a full-grown, like, moose who goes through the wooden door easily. But doesn't try to go through this door.
Maybe the captain's door specifically is wood, metal, wood.
That'd be stupid.
That would be stupid. But also, if you were a rich asshole who would hide in the captain's quarters during an emergency, would you rather have protection where you were or where the crew was?
I'd rather hire real protection.
I know. I'm just making up bullshit. But anyway, the little tiny laser pistols can't get through the lock of the door. But... And I love when Silver, like, gets there's like, y'all, you're taking too long! And then he sticks his robot hand in his robot thigh and pulls out a big fuck-off Metroid cannon.
Which blows the door to smithereens.
But our heroes have made it down a hole into, like, the bowels of the ship. They're gonna grab a longbow and escape to the planet with the map.
And I will say that's one scene the CG does not hold up well.
No.
Is the 3D... It's almost like Roger Rabbit running down a 3D tunnel.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. The internals of the ship aren't the best.
They look a lot like 3D cutouts.
The wood works pretty well, but the metal isn't quite as good, which is weird, because
it should be the reverse, yeah. But no, it's really weird seeing these 2D characters, like, with what feels like should be the proper shadow, but isn't.
Yeah.
Like, just look very fucking weird.
Whatever. It's not.
But it's hilarious, though.
Mm-hmm. The captain and Doppler get to the longboat, but Jim has to take a, like, break from running to save their lives because Morph decided he wants to play again, and he grabs the map. Morph grabs the map, and so, like, Silver is apparently the only pirate who makes it down to where the longboats are. Everyone else is just shooting from the doorway like bitches. So the captain and Doppler are trying to get the longboat out, and Jim's like, Morph! Come here, Morph! Morph, come here!
Oh, you did miss the part where Doppler killed three of the crewmates.
That happens during this exchange.
Yeah.
They go back and forth. But yeah, that does happen. You are right. Dr. Doppler does not know how to use a pistol. He has never had one in his hand before. Like, when he gets handed one originally, he's like, I theoretically know how to, and then he, like, shoots a hole in the wall.
Okay, no, I don't have.
And then, like, while the captain and him are, like, fighting off the pirates and Jim's trying to get the map back from Morph, Doppler, like, fires and hits, a space chandelier.
Like, yeah, just something hanging from the ceiling, which
falls on three pirates, and then they all fall out of the ship to the planet below and to their death.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that's a confirmed three deaths.
There are a lot of the pirates die in this film, which is not a bad thing, but
it
is
not hurt
thing.
My feelings.
It's really funny because this is nowhere near the highest death count of a Disney film.
Oh no! But also, these characters mean nothing.
Yeah, they're just pirates to be killed. They were cool background monster, like alien designs. Other than that, they have no personality and or meaning to the story.
Nope.
They're there as a generic threat, and as long as there are some pirates, there is some threat, and that's good enough.
That's all I need.
As long as there are more than three pirates, they are outnumbered. So that's important. That's pretty much all you need for threat.
You just need Silver, Crabman, and throw in another one.
Anyway, Jim finally does, like, grab the map and jumps into the longboat, and the longboat escapes, and the dumbass who's at the cannon tries to shoot them down, but Silver's like,
no, you idiot, they have the map.
Don't kill them. They have the fucking map, yeah. You dumb motherfucker.
But they still get winged. Kind of, yeah, winged by the plasma blast.
And
whatever,
like,
you want to call it.
Is at that point where Amelia grabs her side.
Because she's been hurt because they fell out of the sky onto this planet and, like, was basically a rubber raft.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's probably shrapnel, if I'm guessing. Like, they hit their ship, and she was at the one steering and hit the back, so I'm guessing some bit hit into her internal organs.
Even though there's no blood.
Yeah, there's no blood.
Because it's Disney.
Yeah, Disney's weird about that shit. Oh, people straight up dying? Sure. Is there blood? Yeah, we're not. No.
We'll show the shadow of a man being hung, but not blood.
We'll make the snap as a sound effect in that scene. Or we'll imply that a guy falls from a castle onto spikes, naturally occurring outdoor spikes.
And dies off screen, but not blood.
No blood.
Surprised they don't go to the Dragon Ball route and just make it green.
That was actually a common thing in like video games for quite a while. Like the European versions of even like Link to the Past. No, Link, so not, no, the Ocarina of Time. The 64 one.
Having miscolored blood.
It has green blood for like the stabbing Ganon in the face scenes.
That's
just an interesting
thing.
That
is hilarious. It makes sense though. He's Ganon. He's green.
Yeah. Anyway, they crash on the planet. The captain is hurt. And Jim's like, well, we're not dead, and we have the map, and he pulls the map out of his pocket.
And?
It's not the map. It's Morph. Morph pretended to be the map as a joke, so the map is still on the boat. He's still on the ship. It's still on the Legacy.
If Morph was any more sentient or intelligent, you'd think that was a double cross.
But no, this is literally just like, I am barely smarter than a dog. I thought this would be funny. And it was, because I'm laughing.
Like, no, Morph, that's not funny! You're fucked us!
So, like, they're not in a great position. The pirates are hunting them. And they're like, hey, Jim, you go scout for, like, a defensible position. And then Amelia tries to do more shit. And Doppler's like, no, sit down. You're hurt. Let me treat you as best I can. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not that kind of doctor.
I have a doctorate, but I'm not a doctor.
So as Jim is scouting on this weird alien planet, he runs into Ben. The marooned robot who has lost his mind. Like, literally, his mind as a robot has been removed. His memory bits. So Ben is supposed to be like a bioelectronic navigator.
Yeah, bioelectronic navigator, Ben.
Which implies that he has some living bits in him, which is mildly disturbing, but whatever. I'm not going to deal with that. It's played by Martin Shore, and he's a little annoying. It's not terrible. He's far from the worst comedic Disney sidekick.
Yeah. But he's annoying, but he's not the worst.
He's not the gargoyles from Notre Dame.
Oh, God.
But he is nowhere near the worst comedic sidekick.
It is pretty annoying, though, that the first exchange that he has with Jim is, be quiet, which he proceeds to never follow for the rest of the 20 minutes of the movie he's in.
Well, he lost his brain, so, yeah.
He can remember certain plot necessary things, but he can't remember the words, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, so, like, he seems to still have some memory, because, like, Jim asks him, like, wait, like, he Ben absentmindedly mentions that he used to work for Flint.
He has a lot of treasure that's somehow in some part of the middle of some planet, which might be some of the treasure, maybe the planet that is made of...
He basically gives some, like, cryptic clues about how, like, he doesn't remember all of it. He's like, oh, the treasure. I helped him hide the treasure. It's in the centroid. The centroid of the mechanism! Whatever the fuck
whatever that the
means.
Mechanism is.
And I remember a door opening and closing and opening and closing, and that's all he remembers. And then Jim slaps him, and he's like, forgets Jim even.
Hey, who are you?
I want to say Larry. Then, like, Ben lets them all crash at his place, which is like a giant egg cave.
I mean, it's a place to hide out.
It's a place to hide out made of metal, because a lot of this planet seems to be like metal or stone.
Oh.
But at Ben's place, the pirates find them because Ben's like, hey, it's more of your buddies. Hey, fellas, over here!
And if their spot wasn't given away, it was now.
Yeah. And Silver tries to parlay with Jim, and he and Jim talk like at the midpoint between the pirates and the cave thing. And he's like, listen, Jim, I have a deal for you, buddy. Listen, if you help me out, give me the map, then you'll have an equal part of the treasure. Sounds good, right,
we'll
buddy?
We'll both be rich. Also, that whole I don't give a shit about you thing, oh, that was just me acting cool in front of my friends. You get it, right?
Yeah, it's like, if they thought I had gone soft, they would have slit my throat.
They would have killed both of me.
They would have killed the both of us. The only way to save it was to save it. And then Jim, because he's gone through this whole character arc of being more self-actualized and having both confidence and skills that he is proud of and is good at, and a whole character arc, he's like, you know what? I was told to stick to it, to stay my own course. So I'm going to make sure you don't get one drabloon of my treasure.
Fuck yourself.
And then Silver gets mad and he's like, listen, if I don't get that map by tomorrow, I'll use the ship's cannon to blast y'all to kingdom come.
Basically saying, I'm going to fucking kill you.
So in the cave, the heroes try to figure out what to do. And Jim Barry's like, wait a minute. If he wanted the map, he doesn't know that we don't have it. So that means we have an advantage. Ha-ha.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ben, like, says, like, hey, while you guys are thinking this whole through, I'm going to dip out the back door.
Wait, back door?
Yeah, and he just, like, moves a fucking divot in the ground, and a hole appears that goes into the planet, and we see that the planet is full of circuitry and machinery.
Almost like it's a mechanism.
And I love this scene. It's like, hey, Ben, what the hell's up with that? Oh, you mean the miles and miles of, like, machinery that goes through this entire planet? Not a clue!
Yeah, good question.
So using the tunnels, Jim and Ben, and Morph, but mostly Jim and Ben, steal the pirate's longboat to get back to the ship. Because they figure that they'll be able to get the map, they'll be able to disable the cannons, and that there'll only be like one or two people on board, because everyone else is on shore. Which makes some sense.
That makes perfect sense.
So, at first he's like, hey Ben, you stay here, while I get the map. All right, Jimmy, you get the map and I'll disable the cannons.
Whatever.
Yeah, and Ben just takes off.
Just skedaddles trying to find like, almost like a breaker room.
Yeah,
it's almost like what do they call those? The like
a utility room.
Yeah, well, it's like the boards from when telephones. You take one of the pins and put it in one. Whatever you call those.
Yeah. I think those were just called, like, telephone boards.
Yeah, telephone board.
But, yeah, everything is connected using, like, guitar amp aux cables, that type of thing. Everything on the ship is controlled by those wires.
The alarms, the lights.
Yep. And, like, the wiring on this ship is so fucking bad, it would make an IT person cry. Because, like, the wires have no sort of organization. There's no zip ties. There's no nothing. They're just, like,
dangling.
It's like if you took it's like if you took the Christmas lights of 8 families, put them in a blender, and then didn't sharpen the blade so none of them got cut, and it was just a tangled mess when you were done.
Ah, sounds like a good time.
Because Ben is an idiot, he accidentally sets off the alarm on the ship, which has never gone off until now, not even like when the fucking supernova / black hole event happened. So it's weird that it has one.
That was an emergency.
Maybe it's only if the ship's getting stolen, like at port. It's
like
a car
alarm. There you go.
Anyway, so because Ben sets off the alarm, the only person on board, Monsieur Crab.
Monsieur Crab?
He fucking realizes, fuck, someone's on board.
I better kill them.
He starts fucking chasing Jim, because he finds Jim first. And at this point, Jim has the map. He's just trying to, like, get Ben and get the fuck out. But now he has a giant fucking crab man trying to kill him. And we get this chase scene where they go through the tunnels in the ship. And then the lights go out. And then, like, the emergency red lights come on. And he's like, where the fuck is it?
Yeah, because Jim does have one of the little blaster things.
Yeah, he has a blaster. He's trying to kill the crab man. But, like, he's a 16-year-old. This is the first time he's held a gun in his life.
And it gets knocked out of his hands.
Yep, and then during the fight, Ben turns the gravity off, so everything starts floating up, which isn't how that would work, but whatever. Especially if they were that close to a planet, but whatever.
Yeah.
And like Crabman and Jim start flying to their dooms. Like soon they'll get out of the ship's range and die.
Just float off into space.
But because Crab Bugman has claws and spider legs, he starts climbing up the mast. And Jim's up there, just holding on to the pirate flag, trying to, like, not die.
And so Crabman's like, oh, well, say hi to Arrow for me.
And just starts cutting the line.
Slowly.
And then Jim's like, tell him yourself! And he, like, pulls his way down.
Grabs the flagpole, and so he does not have to worry about him cutting it off.
And, like, knocks Crabman loose and sticks him to the flag, and then Crabman flies off.
No, because Crabman jumps towards
him. Oh, yeah, Crabman's
like, no, you don't! And then he dodges him. Yeah. Then he's like, oh, no, I'm flying into space.
You're right, I'm wrong. So then Crabman flies to his doom in a slightly morally justifiable way, because Jim did not directly kill him.
Once again.
Our heroes are heroes because they did not murder on purpose.
Hooray. See, now if they had grappling hooks, that wouldn't be a problem.
Then Ben turns gravity back on, and the cannons are apparently disabled. Or at least Ben says they are, and he's covered with wire, so surely that must be the case.
That, or at least no one's there to operate them.
Jim returns to the cave.
You know, that'd be one thing if they were not morally correct. They just turn the plasma cannons on the pirates who were sleeping, and ba-boom!
Yeah, that does seem like the easy solution. Because this isn't like a real cannon that take like a strong group of 5 men to help load it. This is like a plasma cannon on a dolly that can turn 360 degrees.
Or you just take the ship, have them at cannon point, and then go get the treasure yourself.
Yeah, that does seem like a solution. Or even just take the ship, grab Amelia and Doppler, and fucking leave. Like, let them have the treasure and come back with, like, the space police.
Leave for a few months, wait for them to starve to death, then come back and take the treasure.
Yeah. It's a brilliant plan that we thought of just now.
No. It's a good thing I'm not in the movie.
Yeah. It's a good thing we aren't, because the movie would be shorter. Anyway, Jim goes back to the cave and tries to, like, show the map to the captain. But it's not the captain. It's Silver!
Yeah, I don't think Doppler would have been much of defense.
I mean, Captain Amelia is injured and a little out of it because of injuries and blood loss, probably, even though we don't see any blood.
And Doppler's Doppler.
Yeah, I mean, he has a gun pistol, and he's actually not bad with it, apparently.
At least not on purpose.
But, like, it is, like, the two of them, an entire pirate crew, and I love how they go, like, hey, Jim, thanks for showing us the back way in, because they apparently used the same tunnel that Jim did.
I could see, like, Silver just having one eye open, pretending to sleep.
Yeah.
Because Ben was loud as shit when they, like, moseyed across. Mm-hmm. Once again, Ben's a fucking moron.
Yeah. Yes, he is. He gets better when later. But the, he's. But right
good
now.
Good thing he got better in the last 5 minutes of the movie he's in.
Oh, maybe 10. You might give him 10.
I might. If you count the credits, yeah.
Anyway, the captain and the doc are tied up, and then, like, Silver gets the map. But Silver can't figure out how to fucking open the damn thing, even with his cyborg technology. Which is kind of funny.
Doesn't understand how to work this spherical Rubik's Cube.
Literally, it's just like 4 button pushes and then spinning the right directions. And he even watches Jim do it and he can't recreate it.
Well, I don't know why he just goes, hey, Jim, open this or I'll fucking kill you.
Well, he kind of does.
Or, Jim, show me how to open this or I'll fucking kill you.
I mean, he does. Like, he opens it. And then, like, now that they're on the planet of treasure, it's not the giant galaxy map. It's just a fucking green line that shows exactly where you're supposed to go.
The GTA mini map.
Exactly. Anyway, he opens it. And then Silver's like, to the treasure, lads! And then Jim closes it. And he's like, listen, I'll keep the map open.
But I'm coming with.
Take them all.
Yar, take all.
And so they follow the map to the very end, and they find nothing.
They find a cliff.
Yeah, there's just a cliff. A fat lot stinking nothing.
And that's what I call a cliffhanger. We'll see you for Treasure Planet 2.
Exactly. See you out, folks.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no.
I wish. That'd be a hell of a... That's like Endgame level.
You mean where you basically had the movie done with, but you decide you're making another movie on top of it?
Everyone dies. But now we're going to make a second one where they come back to life.
Any fucking way. Silver's like, you'd better figure out what's going on, Jimbo. I can't open the map again! And like the pirate crew are like, we're going to kill Silver and the boy because
we're pissed off on a cliff with jack shit here.
And then fucking Jim sees this like round divot in the ground. And
he cleans off some moss.
And he just fucking dips the orb into it. And then a giant fucking doorway in the sky opens.
A stargate.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a triangle stargate.
Bill Cipher.
And the sight they see through it, one of them recognizes, and it's like, that's halfway across the galaxy. And Jim, and then like the orb has a tiny little map of the universe floating above it.
And you can just click on any of the planets. Do you get a door open to it?
I love Jim's realization where he's like, a door opening and closing. Flint would appear out of nowhere and vanish without a trace. He used this portal to rob the universe. And then I love Silver where he just starts randomly touching planets. Where'd he hide his blasted treasure?
Also, I like to point out, it's like, it's not just like an overview of the planet. One of the ones he presses literally is like on the ground and they're looking at like some like big fuck ugly monster.
Yeah, it's like a sandworm.
Yeah, it almost gets through and they just click a different none.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so here's the thing. Can it only open the portal when the ball is in the hole?
I think so.
So the guy would go through the hole, rob some people, turn around and then just go back through the hole.
Yeah.
That's spawn camping. That's bullshit.
Yeah, it does seem bullshit.
And you're completely invisible on the other side. No, you can't see them through the other side of the hole.
It's Elite Hacksaws.
Or, like, that's at least what I presume, or else people would know, like, oh, God, he can tear fucking wormholes through time and space and just rob us whenever he feels.
Yeah, I think it's invisible from one side.
Like, that would make sense to me, and then you forget where you put it in the deep, endless void of space. Like, fly that way. Oh, no, back up. Fly that way.
I wonder how the fucking map got anywhere, since we find out what happens to Flint later. How did the map fucking get spread out to the universe? It should have been like left on this planet and then no one would have found this place
unless one of the crew members
one of these crew members didn't take any treasure. They just took the map
or he had a master copy.
Yeah,
wouldn't that be funny?
There's two orbs that can control this thing and like the first mate ran off with one of them,
then he died,
and then it just started like jumping from adventurer's hand to adventurer's hand until someone finally went there in this movie. Anyway, like, Silver's like, where the fuck did he hide his treasure if he got the treasure through this? And I'm like, there's a part of me that's kind of like, okay, so Flint's trove is massive and important, but also you're still pirates, and this is probably the greatest resource you will ever have in that profession.
And also, this place is called Treasure Planet.
Yeah, Jim remembers what Ben was talking about, how the treasure is hidden in the centroid of the mechanism, and Jim's like, if the entire planet is the mechanism, then the treasure's at its core. It's at the very core of this planet.
And the stupid pirates start
trying
to hand dig at the like metal ground.
One of them jabs their pickaxe in and it gets bent to shit.
It's like, no, you idiot. And he just clicks on the planet on the map.
Yeah, why would you want to teleport to Treasure Planet unless you were teleporting inside? Right. And then, holy shit, this is a really cool scene. I really fucking love it.
The core of the planet
is just entirely made of gold coins and gems.
Jeweled.
Like, the entire, like, what would be, like, the iron core of the Earth is just gold and gold. Treasure.
With, like, laser and pistons going through holes.
Probably to keep the planet stable.
Stable, yeah.
Especially with what we know later. So, yeah, they get inside, but unknown by everyone, like, no one notices this. Even though it's not an invisible tripwire, it's like a laser tripwire that is super obvious and makes a beeping noise.
As they walk through it. And they all walk through it.
And no one notices that they walk through it and that there's this little beep, 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 beep.
There's a red tripwire ankle high. They're just so damn excited to get to the treasure that they just kind of speed walk through it.
Yep. And so the treasure, so the pirates obviously are like, holy fuck, it's treasure. Let's Scrooge McDuck this shit in celebration.
We're fucking rich as fuck.
So they start like jumping in the gold and like scooping what they can into their pockets. And it's like, we're going to need a bigger boat for all this treasure. Because it is the loot of 1,000 worlds. Why would you think you could fit it all in one boat? But anyway, I digress. And then, like, while the pirates have ignored Jim at this point. Who fucking cares what Jim does?
We're fucking rich.
We're fucking rich. He can't leave without us.
Cares if he's alive.
Yeah. But Jim sees Flint's ship off in the... I can't say it's the corner because it's an orb, but over there.
Over the horizon.
He sees Flint's ship and is like, Ben, we'll go over there. I have an idea.
Take the ship.
Well, he doesn't say that yet, but
not yet, but that's the idea.
So on Flint's ship, they find Flint's skeleton. And apparently, in his dying breath, Flint held on to Ben's memory.
His memory core unit thingy.
Because literally...
In his death clutches.
Yeah, is like Ben's mind. And so Jim reconnects Ben, giving him full faculty. He stops being annoying. He calms down a little bit. Quite a bit, actually.
Also, the thing that's really weird for his design is like the back of his head is just like a couple like frail like wires. But he puts the mind unit like even relatively close and it just like magnetically connects and all the wires just kind of cinch back into place.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work scientifically, quote unquote, but I know why they did it. It's because Ben was a character that was just like a maroon sailor in the original. And they wanted to give him
messy
like,
hair.
Yeah, they wanted to give him like the insane messy hair, and then this helps him.
But it's just funny to me. It's like, just gonna, and there, all the cords are good now.
And then, like, Ben remembers everything. I remember everything. I helped him hide the treasure, and then I also helped him set off the big booby trap!
Oh, yeah, by the way, this is a big booby trap.
Yeah, so the entire golden core begins falling apart. Like, the laser things that were shooting through it to keep the planet stable are now just cutting through all of the core bits.
Also, the only reason why he did this is because fuck everybody else, they don't get my treasure.
Yeah, Flint has no reason to do this other than I'm the one who got this treasure. Fuck whoever went to come and get it. If I didn't give it to them, they don't get it. It's destroyed. I will destroy a third of the universe's supply of gold just as a screw you.
This is how one is going to end.
Yeah, maybe.
They go to Treasure Planet.
Like, the gold core begins to collapse, and Jim plans on using Flint's ship to escape, and he sends Ben to go help the captain. And I love the scene where he's like, listen, I'll get the ship ready. If I'm not there in 20 minutes, leave without me. And Ben tries to go, I'm not leaving without you, and then...
He gives him a stern look. Okay, I wouldn't leave you if you didn't give me that look, but okay, bye.
Bye, Jim!
And he skedaddles.
Some of the pirates die, but, like, as this core is falling apart. But Silver sees Jim working on Flint's ship with his zoom and enhance eye.
Ah!
Like, we see, like, Jim gets some of the engines kind of kicking for a second and then not going. Which, this is kind of a brilliant idea. Get this tiny ship to escape the exploding core. It has a bunch of treasure on it already.
I see, you got plenty of treasure.
Like,
you got multiple chests, like, the whole, like, the floor is covered in gold.
The entire deck.
The entire deck is covered in golden jewels. Like,
Okay, it's not the loot of 1,000 worlds, but it is the loot of
at least a couple million dollars.
It's the loot of take what you can fucking get.
Or you can die.
With nothing.
With jack shit. Thanks for playing, you lose. Good day, sir.
So after Silver sees that Jim's working on the ship, we cut back to the captain and Doppler, who managed to escape through an unconventional mean.
Zzzz.
I just said mean instead of means. That's not right. It's means. So, apparently the pirates are morons, which isn't surprising.
I'm not too surprised.
There is a way to, like, tie a rope so that they're tied like handcuffs, and you can't get out without help.
They don't know how to do that.
No, they, like, didn't tighten it around Doppler's wrists because his wrists are abnormally thin. So Doppler, there's only one pirate that's guarding them. And Doppler's like, hey, fat ass, is your head too teeny tiny for your big fat body? Or is your body too fucking massive for your teeny tiny head?
And in a fit of rage, like, what'd you say to me?
I'll pommel you.
Okay, one question first. And he points a gun at him. He's like, is this yours?
Yeah, he just... I've always wanted to do that. I play D&D, and I've always wanted to do that with a rogue character who's, like, tied up, but I've never had the opportunity to come up, because whenever I play a rogue, I don't get caught. I am too good at being sneaky.
Gotta get caught on purpose.
Anyway, so, they fucking, back inside the fucking exploding core of this planet.
Hello.
Jim manages to get the ship going, but Silver also makes it on board, and they start about to have a confrontation.
I don't really get, like...
It's like, so Jim's still mad at Silver for being a pirate and lying and all that shit.
And Silver gets right in his face as soon as they're trying to leave this planet.
And Silver, this is supposedly, like, what he's been searching for his entire life.
This is life goal.
This is his life's goal. This is why he lost an arm, a leg, and a fucking eye. Like, so, their attentions are high. But then, because of the booby trap, fucking Jim gets knocked off the boat and, like, is hanging on a cliff made by the core falling apart. And Silver is like, I'll help save the kid, but I'm keeping my fucking treasure ship. So he's, like, holding on to the treasure ship with his robot hand.
Away from the laser beam, while also trying to reach out for Jim. But he can't reach, like, okay, fine.
Yeah, he has to make a decision between the treasure and Jim's life.
And he chooses Jim. Surprisingly.
And then the ship explodes because it gets hit by the laser. And apparently that hit, like, the thruster bit. And apparently solar energy can explode.
Meh.
I mean, I guess lithium batteries could explode, and that's, like, lithium and cadmium both explode, so, like, I guess a rechargeable could.
And that's future space pirate technology, so it's probably not as good.
Yeah, so Jim and Silver escape the treasure room, but the entire planet is going to explode, so they still have to get the fuck out of there.
They still have to get off the planet. But also one thing, they're 2 inches away from a map that can send them anywhere else in the universe.
See, they don't think of that soon enough.
Yeah, like, they're stupid.
They are.
Because they walk right fucking by it.
Yeah. Anyway, Jim and Silver make it back to the ship. And on the ship, we see that all of the pirates who didn't die in the core are tied up in the belly of the
in
ship.
The gallows.
And except for Silver, because he just got there.
Yeah, Silver's still, you know, untied.
Dr. Doppler's on the rudder. He's at the tiller, I mean. And he's, like, the only person who's steering. And then Ben's helping them figure shit out and, like, navigate and shit. And they're about to leave the planet. They get ready to take off. And then one of their solar sails get hit.
Ooh.
Also, their cannon does.
And they're only at 30% capacity.
Basically, because they lost that specific solar sail, they won't have enough speed to exit the planet before it explodes. And then Jim has an idea. The same idea you had, much sooner.
Much sooner and much easier.
He realizes that there's a portal. To get back home, as long as they change where that portal goes, they can escape the planet.
But we only have 45 seconds.
I love how fucking smart Jim is about this. Like, the cannon's broken. There's a hunk of metal vaguely in the shape of a surfboard. And then he starts, like, trying to put them together with rope. He's like, I'm going to use what's left of the cannon to make it a booster, to make a makeshift hoverboard, to go change the map, so that we cannot die on this exploding planet.
And then Silver comes over, he's like, no, let me help you. And then
it's like,
just welds
what do
it
you
together.
Need, boy? So we don't die. I need some way to attach these.
Okay.
Robot arm.
Just hot welds it. Just meow, 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 meow. All right, here you go. Good enough. Get going.
We get another awesome jetboard scene as he's, like, swooping and swerving around the exploding planet as, like, parts of the ground rise and fall and try to smush him in between. Imagine this thing as, like, a Disney ride. That would be fucking awesome.
Especially the death part.
Yeah. And then we get this moment where his board fails and he starts falling. Like, the way his board is working up, he basically made the ignition for the plasma thing activated by hitting a, hitting a pedal on his foot. And instead of making a giant explosion, it makes a controlled, slow burst of plasma instead, I guess.
Science.
Yeah. So in order to ignite it, he starts skidding his engine on the wall to light the last one that stuck.
Basically the future version of Fonzie hitting the jukebox.
Kinda, yeah. That's actually a pretty good one. And so, he rushes. It's seconds away. The ship is about to make it to the portal. And on the last possible second, Jim manages to perfectly touch the Montressor moonport.
Then we get a moment of silence. And then they make it, yay, because they definitely weren't going to end the movie like that.
Yeah. So the Legacy makes it out. Jim flies on top of the ship, makes it back on board. I also love that not only did he change it to somewhere safe, he specifically changed it to the nearby port of his home planet.
Made it easy to get home.
It did. But, like, that took some fucking skill and or main character bullshit. He makes it on board, and everyone is alive who was on board, you know, and not the pirates that that fell earlier twice.
The ones that fell or fell.
Yeah. Everyone's alive. The captain's like, you know what, Jim? You're an amazing young lad. I'm going to recommend you for the academy. What academy?
The Academy. The Space Academy.
Well, like, in the original story, it was the Navy Academy, but this is space, and there isn't a space Britain in this version of story, so...
The Empire.
Jim is like, yay, we're all alive, but he notices that Silver has gone missing.
Because he's gonna go to his fucking jail, because he's a damn pirate.
Yeah, so Silver is trying to take the last longboat to get the fuck out of there, and Jim and him have this heart-to-heart where it's like, hey, Jim, you want to come with me?
You can be my first mate.
We'd make quite the pair, you and I. And then Jim's like, you know, if you had asked me that when I'd first gotten on board, I would have said no instantly. But now that I've had this entire life-changing adventure...
Oh, no, he would have said hell yeah in the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, in the beginning, I would have said yes immediately. But now that I've had this amazing adventure that I've grown, that an old fogey shipman told me to chart my own course and to stick to it...
I'm gonna do that.
And then... Silver has this moment where it's like, oh my god, you're glowing so bright. I'm catching the shine off you.
They both got tears in their eyes and they fucking, all right, well, bye.
And he leaves Morph with Jim.
So here's Morph, and also here's some spare space change I got from that planet.
Yeah, I guess he feels bad for burning down his surrogate son's family business.
And I'm guess he was the only one smart enough to actually throw some coins in his pockets.
Yeah, so Silver had, like, his pockets full of gold, and he throws all that he had up to Jim, like, hey, this should be enough to rebuild that building I burned down.
And then some.
And then...
Yeah, I still can't believe, like, Jim didn't do that. Like, oh, yeah.
Well, he was... His one and only plan was the ship. Let's remember, Jim might be smart, but he's still, like, 16.
His fucking tunnel vision is a motherfucker.
Like, he might be a smart 16-year-old, but he's still a 16-year-old. Let's be real.
You're trying to tell me 16-year-olds don't know how to steal money?
No, I'm trying to say that 16-year-olds aren't necessarily the best at planning for the future.
Or stealing money.
I don't know, I've known some good 16-year-old thieves.
Because if I was in a room filling with water, but it was also full of $100 bills, I think I could multitask at the age of 2.
Whatever. We didn't write this movie. We cut to Jim at the spaceport, and apparently his mother knew he came in, even though they just teleported across the galaxy and would have no way to send word forward that they had gotten there. Unless he was just hanging out there for like 3 days while his mom learned about him getting there and flew up herself. I don't know.
Eh.
Space logic. They have a reunion. They rebuild the Benbow Inn, and it's like twice as large and way nicer.
Way fancier.
On opening night, Jim is escorted in by the police, but this time it's like an honor guard, not a, like, police.
As a rapscallion?
Yeah, he wasn't arrested. It's like, Jim made it in! He's, like, in his new military uniform, yay! And everyone's like, yay! He also had to cut his hair.
And also Morph turns into, like, a badge.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's dancing, the music is playing.
Everyone's happy.
It turns out that the captain and Doppler have gotten married, or at least fucked, and have 4 kids now.
I mean, they are animal people, so it works a little bit quicker, I'm guessing.
I guess. I don't know.
Or, I mean, the guy... Jim was in military academy long enough and apparently passed, so it's been a couple months at least.
He's at least gotten into the academy. He maybe hasn't graduated, but he probably got the night off because his mother's business was opened up.
And he's got a good word with the commander.
Yeah. So everyone is happy. And then we get the end music, which is pretty good too. But not...
Also, Silver turns into a cloud
he
spirit. Yeah, he turns into a Mufasa. For some reason. Because they had to shoehorn him in at the ending to make you feel better.
Anyway, also, here's a bit of extra history. We sort of mentioned before how this movie already had a sequel that was in the works that got canceled because of the failure of the box office failure of the film. And part of my tin hat theory, that isn't entirely my theory, but the internet's theory as a whole.
One that you like.
Yeah. Director June Falkenstein, and screenwriter Evan Stipulopoulos. I'm not even butchering those that badly. That's the weird part. Began early development on Treasure Planet 2. In the sequel, Jim Hawkins and Kate, his new love interest and classmate at the Royal Interstellar Academy, must team up with Long John Silver to stop the villainous Ironbeard from freeing the inmates of Botany Bay Prison Asteroid. William Dafoe was set to voice Ironbeard. Tommy Walter was asked to write and perform songs for the film. However, it was canceled after the early thing. Good. I actually think a part of the script got leaked online. If you want to look into it. It's actually not that bad. Like, as far as Disney sequels go, it would have been...
pretty alright.
It's closer to Cinderella 3 than Fox and the Hound 2.
I could believe that.
But yeah.
Well, anyway, this is a good movie.
I fucking love this film. It has this special, like, place in my deep, dark, blat emo heart.
Nah.
I appreciate the messaging. It was one of the... This was around the time when Disney made a bunch of movies that were not the best received for some valid reasons and some not valid reasons. Like, there was no reason why The Emperor's New Groove had to fail, or this movie, but I get why Atlantis did.
How Atlantis.
Yeah. Like, some of those movies were unfairly judged at the time, but some of those movies, like, Atlantis looks cool, but has, like, no emotion anything.
Atlantis is a...
has no emotional core.
Copypasta movie.
Yeah. All the things in it is cool. Like, it's a visually interesting movie.
If you turn, like, a Steven Seagal action film into an animated movie...
Yeah, kinda. There you go. That's not a bad comparison. But yeah, this was part of Disney's kind of meh run. But this movie was really good. I fucking love it. I love the connection between Jim and Silver. I love... that they only have one pop song. They could have filled this with pop songs. And they used the one pop song better than some.
They did.
Because it actually, like...
made sense.
It made sense as both, like, Jim's theme and as that part of the film.
Also, they took notes from Phil Collins and just threw the song in instead of having a character sing it.
Well, like, this movie, that's fine because they only had one. I think it doesn't work quite as well when you have 8 songs that sounded almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like in Tarzan. That's like a Disney musical where instead of it being a musical, they just have a guy off screen screaming the music. So it doesn't quite have the right impact that a musical would.
Yeah, they took notes from Phil Collins. They didn't copy him.
Which is good, because we don't need another Brother Bear.
Yeah, we don't need Brother Bears. Or Tarzan. No, Tarzan was alright.
Tarzan is alright. It's not great, but it's all right. It's better than Brother Bear's 1 and 2. Yeah. Anyway, I guess bullshit review time. I give this film The Loot of 1,000 Worlds, because I love it that much, even if it's a little bit, even if I have a bit of nostalgia glasses for it.
Give this 3 attempted murders from your fatherly figure out of 5.
Yeah, that seems about right. This has been a lot of fun to talk about. I fucking love this movie, and I knew we were going to cover it eventually, and I just said, fuck it, why not now?
Right, meow.
Time to shill.
Chill.
If you want to talk to us, we're at Twitter, @ficfans, with a Z.
DM us.
Go for it. As long as you're not one of the 8 million porn bots doing it, we don't really care, for the most part.
Drinking that bot.
Yeah. If you want to support us financially, you can, like, get, be, we have a Patreon
and a
Buy us a coffee. Both at FicFans with a Z. If you don't want to support us monetarily, but want to maybe spread the word around, tell your neighbor, tell your friends, tell your dog, tell your surrogate father figure who is also a criminal.
Tell your annoying, yelling robot man that you just found without his memory.
We're available on all major podcast platforms, including Google, Spotify, Apple, and Amazon.
And many more.
And many more. We had a lot of fun talking about this. We hope you had fun listening to it. Have a good one. Peace.